This is Amy Poehler. My new movie, Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, is coming to theaters June 14th, and it's making me feel joy and sadness and anger, definitely some disgust,
Rose,
and I think a little fear.
Really?
But I'm also feeling these new emotions like anxiety, embarrassment, envy, and ennui.
It's what you call the boredom.
Okay, that one was weird. It's going to be the feel-everything movie of the summer. Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, only in theaters June 14th. Get tickets now.
You're tuning in to the online broadcast network, AfterBuzz TV. Over 20 million weekly downloads in over 150 countries and your number one source for after-show entertainment. TV, the destination for TV superfans, producing aftershows for over 300 of your favorite TV shows, interviewing celebrities and showrunners, and bringing you behind-the-scenes exclusives. All thanks to E! Entertainment's Maria Menounos, producer Kevin Undergaro, and internet leader Akamai. Now, let the buzz begin!
Welcome to the AfterBuzz Blacklist After Show. Songless, we're coming in. It's okay.
Songless. We have a lot to say. We can't waste the time.
It's like our own cold open. We're just coming in hot.
It's our cold open
coming in hot. I'm Joe Braswell. I'm joined, as always, by the lovely Julia Carely.
Hi, everybody. Not always. Missed you last week, guys.
We missed you last. We're alternating here, I guess, with Joe, Flippo, and Nando minding the store last week, and then this week it's me and Julia.
It's like we're on a little date.
We like us better.
We do.
We have Stephen Lemieux, too, on the ones and twos here helping us out. We call him Wheezy, but that's a separate story. anyway, Blacklist, we're happy to be back. We have the longevity. We missed the whole Tom Keene thing.
Which just hurts my soul.
I know.
That's what I've been waiting for.
People want to know what
season plus 16 episodes.
People want to know what you think about Tom Keene shirtless working out. So why don't you get that take out of the way?
It was well worth the wait, okay. Ladies and gentlemen. And
he did some
color
sit-ups.
Me pleased.
He did some push-ups.
He sure did, just for me.
Shirtless?
Shirtless. Is there any other way when you're Tom Keene?
I think I've said this before. I'm a full 180 on Tom Keene. He's like my favorite guy.
He's the best.
He went from being this new tough guy Tom Keene with the muscles.
Mm-hmm.
You know. I
muscles.
He's tough.
I didn't see any muscles.
I know. I like this guy. No, he's tough. In the beginning of that last episode,
Now he's kind of like a hybrid season one Tom Keene and now season two Tom Keene, where he's a little badass, a little bit of a lover boy.
Right.
It's a hybrid. It's perfect in every way.
I agree. I like Tom Keene. So that happened last week. The judge, I mean, we're kind of recapping what happened. We weren't here. But
we weren't here. You guys were there.
The judge was the judge, and he was just sort of an overzealous judge who kind of got smacked down.
Sure did.
By our man Tom Conley, which is kind of cool.
Yeah.
And, so that's that. And so everyone's free and off. But Keene is blown.
His cover is blown to pieces.
So he's in the wind. On the run in the wind. So, which brings us to the longevity initiative, where he is on the run, but he's calling. Like, he keeps calling Lizzie. Like, when did this start, by the way? I remember it's been a couple episodes, but like, it just is weird because it feels like she accepts his call, like she wants
sure
to
does.
Hear from him, but she's always like,
don't but then
call
she
me
always
again.
Ends it with, goodbye, Tom.
Yeah, Tom.
Tom, where are you? Goodbye, Tom.
But it's kind of a
every
sweet
time.
Thing. So, yeah.
I would do the same thing, Lizzie. It's okay. I would take his calls.
But it's good that Tom is... Tom clearly loves Lizzie. I was wrong about that, man. I wonder if that was a choice early on. I wonder if that was something that they sort of developed as Tom Keene's character got popular. And I want to figure out to sort of bring him back into the fold and sort of making him, like, into a more sympathetic character after he's done all this stuff and really be in love with Lizzie, because we can't resist love.
We can't resist love.
No matter what he's done, he
it's
loves
makes
her.
Makes the world go round.
Right.
But, you know, he got pretty deep in his undercover with her. They were going to start a family.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know if that was part of the original job description,
well,
have
Red,
babies with her.
Well, Red mentioned that how he's so good that he actually believes what he's doing. But I think in that instance, I mean, he fell in love with Lizzie. And
I think so.
Who wouldn't fall in love with Lizzie Keene? So the hello, Julia.
Moving on.
So this was the longevity initiative, which is weird because this is the second time that we've had a non a non-person
person
be a blacklister.
Yes.
I remember we had the Monarch Trust Bank.
Bank.
And then was there another one?
There was. I don't remember what it was.
Oh, it was the firm. Ooh. I don't remember. There was another, this is probably the third. This is the third time we've had a non
at least the third time. Yes.
Number 97, kind of lower down. Tom Keen, number 7, by the way.
Number 7, that's confirmed. A good, solid number.
Good, solid number,
top 10. I'm happy with that number.
He's a top 10 blacklister. So, yeah, so what we have is... first of all, what are your first impressions of this?
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Episode.
I think it was a fine episode. It wasn't my favorite, but it wasn't by any means my least favorite either.
Right.
It was fun. I don't know if I was totally into the blacklister itself right. as the longevity initiative, but huh. everything surrounding it I was into. The whole Tom story, yeah. Red story, Lizzie story, wrestler. Wrestler was a little odd for me.
Yeah, well, he was a little out of offline. Character. What do you mean by that?
I don't know. He was kind of like
unpack that
sweet.
For me.
To Lizzie a lot, oh, yeah. even when they were on the job. When he goes, you have a lot to celebrate, and a little pat on the back there. He got a little high and mighty move. When he was talking to Cooper, when he was shocked that Cooper said, let the billionaire guy yeah. go. I don't know. I think it's just, I don't know. It was just a little odd
it feels
to
like
me.
An
it didn't
effort.
Feel like his normal characterization.
Well, it feels like an effort to sort of give wrestlers some depth, because we've talked about for the last... You know, season and a half, there's just, he's been sort of one note.
Yeah,
you know?
But instead it came off to me as kind of cheesy.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And okay. but and I love wrestler. I'm a big sure. wrestler fan.
Yeah.
It just didn't seem very organic to his character and his relationships that he has with the other characters.
I think that we have to set him up as, you know, to fulfill my prediction of the love triangle.
Yes.
Yeah, the love triangle.
There it is.
To fulfill my prediction of the love triangle.
The love diamond.
The love diamond. you know, we have to sort of set him up as a sympathetic guy, because it wasn't enough for him as a character to just be frowning and brooding and,
I did
you know,
love
whatever.
Him in the last episode that we missed the show for.
Yes.
When he was over in Germany.
Sure.
Being super cop.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I love that wrestler.
Because I am a cop.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think, you know, I think they're just trying to give, I mean, for the audience sake, we need to give a wrestler, because it's easy, because what you want is to set up a situation where Lizzie has to choose between these two dreamboat guys, these two great guys, and, you know, it's not much of a choice if wrestler is just a, you know, a one-note a-hole.
Sure. No,
know?
I get it. I totally get what they're doing. I just don't think that it was written the right way for him.
Okay.
That's just me.
Fair enough.
But I understand completely what they're doing. I support what they're doing.
Sure.
So, yes. I also enjoyed, for this episode, I enjoyed the theme of morality for yeah. everybody. I thought that was really interesting and right. and multi-leveled. I really liked Dembe's hat.
Dembe.
That was Sebastian. Good flappy hat.
Yeah, the flaps. you know, I like this episode too. Again, I mentioned this a couple weeks ago, and I kind of am sticking to it. And you know, like I really enjoy. I'm finding myself enjoying the serialized elements of the team and the you know of the task force and things around the task force more so than I do the blacklister of the week. Like it's great when a blacklister of the week is elevated to someone cool, and I think they save those for sweeps and
sure.
high ratings episodes. But like when something like the Longevity Institute, which is kind of like 97. Then good, crank up the rest of the story. Like, give us more Cooper, give us more.
Well, I think what bothered me about this blacklister is that it was kind of all for nothing. I know that he needed to sure. get, we'll get into it in a moment, but yeah. he needed to secure the, what's his name, Roger Hobbs. I get uh-huh. that. But the actual idea behind the entire blacklister is like, this is the idea, this is what they're doing, the jellyfish, the Gino, whatever, yada, yada.
Uh-huh.
Doesn't work.
Yeah, well.
Bye bye. Okay.
Yeah, again, like, so, like,
that was a bummer for me.
Well,
because it would have been really cool.
Well, I mean, but I think we talked, like, this is kind of what I was saying. I think these blacklisters serve as a mechanism to be able to advance the plot of the rest of the serialized show.
Yes.
So sometimes the blacklister is a centerpiece, and it's like, oh, the team's coming together to fight the blacklister, or Red has an adversary with this blacklister. Other times, the blacklister exists solely to sort of, advance the plot. Like, this guy was there as a puzzle piece. Like, true. A lot of times these guys are was a puzzle piece because he's connected to Hobbs, and Hobbs is going to somehow, be connected to Lizzie and Red in some day, as Red hinted at. He's also connected to Red because Red was hoping that his research could do some memory extraction for Lizzie. So it just kind of helped sort of advance the
sure,
plot.
Sure, I understand that. Right. I do. I mean, every blacklister is part of the puzzle piece.
Sure. Very much, very much so.
I need my homeland board.
Well, let's just the big white board. So let's jump into this. So the opening scene. We saw the opening scene, which was I didn't realize what was in there, but the heads. Well, the guy got pulled over and then his routine stop, and opened up the back and it seemed okay. He lifted up the tarp, and of course there was a bunch of
brains. Brains! It was very reminiscent of that scene in Hannibal.
Very much Ray Liotta.
Ray Liotta. Ray Liotta eating his own brains.
Yeah, getting his brains eaten. So that was, so that happened. And, that's kind of like, and I do like the fact that they're really, we've talked about this before, but I think that, Blacklist does a really good job with these opening sequences. So really, they're really trying to build something each episode, almost like the opening of a James Bond movie. Mm-hmm. So you kind of know what to expect. It sort of sets this thing up with these sort of giant set pieces and this big reveal and an into credits. It's kind of cool. So brains to end that was cool.
You know me, I like a little gore.
Hey.
Give me some brains. I'll take it. Bloody brains.
So we get into this,
gross. I'm gross.
This doctor. So we kind of see this whole thing with Dr. Powell. I want to start with Dr. Powell, Roger. We'll go back to Cooper. But we see this whole thing with Dr. Powell. It's kind of revealed that he's conducting some sort of experiments. We don't know. And this jellyfish, weird jellyfish in the background. And it's kind of like there's something sinister happening. But it's weird because the work he's doing is not so sinister. I guess it's just the methodology is what's sinister, right? I mean, it's not so much that he's like this evil guy. Even at the beginning, it's just we don't know. It's just the methodology.
He was definitely a sympathetic character, especially right. when we found out why he was doing everything in the first place, and his idea that he was trying to help, and what sort of life did these people have in the first place. I could see where he was going with it.
Yeah, I mean, we'll just stop that. But just we saw him. We get to see like something's happening there. We're not sure. Then we go back and we find out that it's Lizzie's birthday. She's the big 3-1, went off a milestone. Mm-hmm. And I gotta say, Lizzie, 31 years old. She's doing a lot.
You know, she said she thought she'd be so much more accomplished. And I was like, girl, you're pretty accomplished.
You're pretty accomplished. You're
doing okay.
You're like leading a super ultra top secret task force.
You're very important to the U.S. government right now.
Your
personal life may have gone to pot, but.
Yeah, because you live in a hotel and you have no family. And where's that dog?
And you have a dog that apparently you do not take care of.
Where's the dog?
Very upset about the dog.
Does anyone out there in YouTube land or iTunes land know where the dog is?
I haven't seen the dog since midway through season one.
Yeah. So I mean, I'm sure she's giving it. But so it's Lizzie's birthday, and Red is a very cool sentimental thing when she brings her a bottle of wine made from virgin vine.
From grapes that she had harvested with her adopted daddy, Sam.
That's a class act.
That's a good gift.
Yes, it's a super aw. And just in case, those were
1982 Brunello.
1982 Brunello. Not too shabby. So,
good backup. Yeah, solid.
Solid backup. These are the little touches that we love about Red Reddington. And also, again, two gifts that let you know how much he cares about her and how much he's really into her, which we're getting a lot of.
It also
reveals.
Shows how far back he goes in her life.
Sure.
That she was a young child harvesting these grapes with her dad.
Right.
Her adopted dad.
And
that somehow he was kind of there for it or was privy to it.
And I know we're in 2015 now, but is 1983 is that the year she's born? I can't do that math.
I just
is that 31 years ago? I mean, we're in 2015 now, but assuming this was shot in 1984. 2014.
Oh, the 1983 or 1984?
Huh? 83.
Don't make me do math.
I'm just saying that's why he got the 1983 Rita, because it's the year she was born. That's what I'm guessing.
He gave her an 82.
Well, then forget it. Never mind.
But it was
onto something.
It was really
I was really
feeling.
Going there.
You were. You were.
All right. Well, it doesn't make Red any less of a class act.
It surely does not. All 1982 was a very good year for Brunello.
So so that happens. Then we kind of switch back to Cooper. And like you know, I've been complaining this whole, you know, Joe and I have been complaining a lot about give Harold Cooper more to do, and he's such a fine actor, and they're giving him stuff. Like, they're really, really seeing him outside the office, you know, outside of barking orders. Last episode, we really gave him a lot to do.
Oh, yeah.
You know, when he had to really confront Lizzie, and that was kind of cool, then pass out. That was, you know, I totally bought all that. And then this episode, he's doing this, it's a lot going on there because, he's this trial, this clinical trial is working. Mm-hmm. The meds are working. Mm-hmm. He's ditching the cane.
He's feeling top of the world.
He's feeling fantastic.
Spry.
But he gets called, he calls his doctor to let him know what's going on. And of course, the doc's like, yeah.
Aging you out, buddy.
Yeah, you're kind of old.
Or it's very possible we're going to age you out.
Yeah. Which we find out is kind of, you know,
we're assuming.
May or may not come from, which we assume, come
we're
from
assuming.
His friend.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I won't call him a frenemy because they're kind of friends, right?
They were friends, but he's becoming a frenemy.
But is he really an enemy, though? Because he's just really just trying to, you know.
Well, he's manipulating him. He's using his mortality, which is another theme of this entire episode, to guide him in any way that he wants him to go.
But isn't this sort of like, just like, the sort of the beltway, sort of Washington D.C. way of, like, you know, how these, yeah, I mean, presumably how these politicians sort of like make deals and sort of.
I would hope it's, you know, not these major life or death situations. Like, if you don't turn your attention away from this billionaire that is, you know, a good friend of ours, then I'm going to let you die.
Well, politics in general is a sort of a you scratch my back, I'll scratch yours.
That I understand.
And he kind of comes to Harold with under the pretense of, like, you know, you're going to play ball, right? Like, just so you know, this guy's our guy. You know, this guy meaning Dr. Powell. Roger Hobbs. Mm-hmm. So to go back, I mean, in case you didn't see the episode, which I'm sure you did, Tom Connelly, Roger Hobbs is noted to be involved in this investigation.
Yes.
Roger Hobbs is a billionaire who may or may not be funding Dr. Powell's research.
Yes.
And once Tom Connelly gets wind of this, he kind of goes to Harold Cooper and says, you know, Hobbs, the billionaire, he's kind of a friend. Like, we don't really want to, like, shake his tree too hard. Right, Harold? Right, buddy? And Harold's like, you know, justice is justice, and we'll do what we have to do, and I hope you're not saying that. And he's like, oh, you know, I wouldn't say anything like that, buddy. Next thing you know, clinical trial's gone. how shocked were you on this long line that, like, that Harold sort of compromised his integrity in a way? Because once his clinical trial was taken away, he then was started to lighten up on,
well, I was, on Hobbs. I was disappointed. Especially coming off of
disappointed my mom. I'm not
very
mad.
Disappointed in you.
I'm just disappointed.
You really let me down. You really let me down this time.
All right.
Coming off of last week's episode where he got on his crazy high horse and rightfully so to Lizzie and, you know, all the old crap she was pulling.
Sure.
And perjuring himself and how he would never do something like that. And then now we have this episode, his first scene, same sort of thing. Like, I have a job to do. You wouldn't expect me to not do my job because you want to pull a favor.
Right.
But then there's death staring at him.
Yeah.
And so he sort of flips a little bit on that. And I was like, ah, come on. Right. You know what they're doing. But I also get it.
Right. I mean, does it make...
He has everything to lose.
I mean, does it make Cooper, in your opinion, less sympathetic?
Not at all.
Okay.
It makes him more human.
Okay, yeah, it does. I agree. It's just one of those
weird things. I was disappointed, but I understood it.
Right. I do like that they're sort of getting in that gray area because, again, with Harold Cooper, it's been a lot of, you know, I'm this guy. I'm the top cop. Get on it. Check those files. Go canvas that scene, whatever it is. And so
he's been a very black and white character,
right? And so now there's definitely some gray here. Like,
there's some shades of gray.
So I've been, you know, we've been banging for Harold Cooper for something more for him to do, and looks like they've given him something. Which
no,
is good.
I'm happy.
Okay,
and I like to see him outside of the office.
Yes,
see a little home life.
Was
kicking his heels without a cane.
Who I still think is not going to make it.
I'm still with you on that.
I mean,
I am.
Poor Mrs. Cooper. God love her. Charlene is not going to make it.
Nah.
I don't know how. I don't know why. Charlene Cooper is not going to make it. I'm sticking to that.
I'm sticking with you.
I'm not rooting for it, but I'm sticking with it. Something's weird about that Charlene situation. All right. So So they begin the investigation on Dr. Powell. I just want to get through this.
I also like, just real fast to finish with the Cooper Connolly thing. Yeah. At the very end, their last scene together, when he's all dressed up in his tux.
Yeah.
And he goes, you know, I wasn't implying anything after everything is said and done. I had nothing to do with that. And because of course he did. And of course Cooper knows that he did, but he knows that Cooper.
Yeah.
Compromised his morality there.
Man.
And so now it's kind of a standoff, kind of an understanding. And I do like what they're doing there, and I'm very interested to see how far this goes.
I do love the Tom Connolly character. I love the Tom Connolly character.
He's smarmy.
He's super smarmy, and he's super, like, he has this way of, it's the whole plausible deniability. Mm-hmm. This guy who sort of, like, lives between almost like a Red Reddington in a way,
and a political bit.
Red Reddington who sort of like sort of lives between the margins, sort of flies there. I mean, we saw him in last week's episode in the Tom Keene episode go directly at the judge, like, look, here's what's gonna happen, and da 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 da. And then after that, he went back to his mode. It's like, what about Tom Keene? I don't know who Tom Keene is.
He's exactly like Red Reddington, a political Red Reddington, considering what Red pulled this episode on in making Roger Hobbs owe him in the future. He did the same thing to Harold, making Harold owe him
Do you think that our boy Tom Connolly is and will be maybe ultimately some sort of blacklister?
It's possible.
Do you think that he's, like, somehow, like, involved, like when they finally open up the fulcrum, there'll be a picture of Tom Connolly? Like, yo! Like, no! Not you! Connolly!
I think that there is a potential for him to be on the blacklist.
Okay.
I don't know if he is the blacklister. But
like he's very much inserted in the situation without being a bad guy.
He's such a like political ladder climber.
Right.
And I really feel he's out for himself more than anything.
Right.
And I don't think he's part of like the super secret international little meeting group.
I just wonder.
Sewing circle.
I just wonder, you know, out loud if his character exists to sort of like be the sort of morality check for Harold Cooper. Through these trying times, or does this character exist to sort of be something more in the larger picture? Although he did seem pretty in the dark about the task force last episode.
Mm-hmm.
He seemed to be like, whatever it is, it's, you know, national security and it's what it is. And I don't know. It's interesting, but I like Tom Connolly.
And didn't he say, I could be making this up, internet, you will tell me.
Yes.
Didn't he say that Red Reddington was very important?
Yeah.
So...
Well, I mean, how can Red Reddington not be very important? Like, he knows, everyone knows who Red Reddington is. They know he's working for Red in some capacity. He's already called Harold out on that.
But if he was a blacklister, wouldn't he be working to get Red Reddington taken down?
Possibly. I mean, can I ask you, what happened with, David Strathairn? Is he just not back yet? Or is he?
Who?
The director.
Oh. Yeah, I haven't seen him in a while.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I don't remember. I can't, but he's just like dipped out, right? He's not like.
He'll come back.
Okay. I'm assuming the director will be back.
Yeah.
All right.
Because he's very tied into the whole Fulcrum thing, and that's.
Sure.
We have 5 episodes left, I think, right?
Sure.
So I think he will make many, many bold appearances.
Okay. Hopefully he's in for the home stretch. All right. So, to Powell and Hobbs, they continue to investigate Dr. Powell. They sort of find, we see this real, very creepy scene with him testing out his theory on another brainless, headless, brain exposed lady.
Bloody brain.
Like screaming at her, like, what is your name?
That's what he was saying. And then she goes into an awful seizure.
Oh,
and dies.
Poor lady. And this just wasn't working. So, we find out, you know, let me just get through this whole thing with Dr. Powell because there's more stuff to talk about. Dr. Powell is not actually, it is presumed that he has the key to, eternal life. We find this out from a wonderful appearance by our guy. What's his name?
Marshall Flinkman.
Marshall Flinkman.
Kevin Weissman. Love this guy.
Marshall Flinkman.
He's the new FBI coroner, Dr. Jeffrey Maynard.
Yeah, he turns up.
I love this guy.
Marshall's great.
He's
he turns up in a show and it's like, it makes you happy.
It does make make you happy.
Yeah, I like this guy. So,
but I hope to see a little bit more of him.
Yeah, so we get that whole bit of exposition about the glowing bunny and the jellyfish, and then I have no idea whatsoever if that science is true.
The transgenic research.
My marine biology, my like marine biology, you know, vis-a-vis, you know, genome technology is like not.
I have been to the Monterey Aquarium and seen the jellyfish.
Okay. But is there, in fact, a jellyfish that does not die? Does that exist?
I don't know.
I mean, I wish there was a device that could somehow tell me. I wish we lived in a time.
I wish I could just have all the information in all the world right at my fingertips.
Or at my phone. But I don't know. But I will Google that later. I'm sure that you guys will tell us on YouTube. But like,
tell us.
I'm not sure if that's really a thing, but that's the jellyfish that lives forever, but the science of being able to take that, you know, you splice that with human DNA.
Cell reversal. Is this a thing?
And then be able to regenerate. Well, apparently it's not a thing because it didn't work.
Oh, that's true. You
know? And which is what we find out.
But it was true for the jellyfish.
We find out that, you know, Roger Hobbs is funding Dr. Powell because he likes the idea of wanting to live forever. And he's funding this research. And he sort of says that I have no idea how this, you know, how he's doing this, but, you know, I funded the research. I didn't know he'd take it this far. And it turns out that the science is actually not working at all. In fact, the science is actually false. He knows the science is false. What he's really doing is trying to restore, the memory and then sort of the brain cells of his wife, which he is responsible for her being sort of a vegetable and incoherent. Due to falling asleep at the wheel. Which is sad. Very 7 pounds.
It was so sad when we saw the apartment that they shared and everything had been untouched since April 2005. That was a bummer.
It's a bummer summer, man.
Bummer summer.
Or bummer spring because it was April. But yeah. Never mind. Wow. I don't know what I'm doing. So that one's very sad. And I think, you know, I don't know. Like, do you see 7 pounds, Will Smith? All right, never mind.
I think I know the gist of it, though.
Spoiler,
right? He was the recipient of many organs, right?
Yeah,
organ donors.
Well, it doesn't matter. I'm not going to spoil it.
All right, whatever.
It's not a good movie anyway. So
it sucks. Go watch it for yourself.
But it's very 7 pounds. Essay. All the way down to the jellyfish, which is in 7 pounds as well. Anyway. I digress. So it's kind of like he comes from this sinister blacklister to this very sort of bittersweet story and almost sympathetic character, even though he's gone through.
He was a sympathetic character.
Well, he's blown through countless.
Killing people.
He's countless brain dead and mentally
ill people. But he was a desperate character.
Sure.
And he came from a place of love.
Sure.
Again, what makes the world go round.
Sure. So getting back to the guy who funded him, this mysterious Roger Hobbs, who, have we heard his name before? Because I read in Entertainment Weekly, we may or may not have heard his name before. I don't remember hearing his name before, like floated around somewhere.
Wait, but if he's such a high profile billionaire, he's like a Steve Jobs. Of course you know the name.
Yeah, but I mean, just like,
and like a tech guy.
But I mean, in the blacklist universe.
That's what I'm saying.
Okay, yeah, so maybe.
That's what I mean.
Okay.
In the blacklist world.
All right. So maybe, I don't know if we've heard his name before, but it turns out Red Reddington knows him and is working with him, or he's called Red in to sort of take care of the situation because he did not know how bad it got. My question for you is, do you believe him? Do you think he knew how bad it got?
Sure, I do.
So you don't think he was like, I don't know, this guy was doing research, next thing you know, people are dead?
Sure, I do.
Okay. So
I don't think to be such a successful businessman, you would want to know where every penny is going.
Right. Would you characterize Hobbs as a good guy or a bad guy, or just another like a Tom Conley, like a just kind of a, you know, a gray guy?
Gray to bad.
Gray to bad. Okay.
Gray to bad.
Bad. And obviously, Red Reddington alluded that he's an asset. So
yeah, and if he's funding something like this, who knows what else he's funding?
Right. Very true. And he's a billionaire. I love this just culturally.
Got money for days.
Culturally, how, you know, we've turned to, you know, back in the James Bond days of the 60s, it was a bunch of Cold War villains and scientists. In the 80s, it was these other kind of, I mean, like, it was Cold War in the 80s too, but like, now everything's sort of these tech billionaires are the guys who are, you know, who are always the sort of the villain or the guy. It's like there's so many.
Well, they have limitless resources.
Yes, but there's so that archetype of the tech, the Silicon Valley billionaire, has become the best villain in like every movie from Bond to in pop culture, can become the villain du jour in the 2010s.
Yeah, that's true.
So,
good point. Kind of cool.
Interesting. So yeah, so Roger Hobbs, we'll see.
We will certainly be seeing him again. This is without a doubt.
Hobbs asks Red to take care of the situation. Red goes and meets Dr. Powell to take care of the situation, but in fact, he's really going to get his own interest in the science, yep. Which is he wants to see if your science works because, could you retrieve memory?
Yeah.
From Lizzie Keene. Right?
Well, he never said Lizzie King.
Yes.
We're just assuming that it's Lizzie King.
I have this friend
mm-hmm.
who may want to extract some memory from his other friend.
She has a memory that was literally stolen from yes. her when she was a child. So right. I'm assuming it's Lizzie King.
Yeah. So, and he is very, you know, said it doesn't work. And then he goes in there and sort of like does the do. And I just, I'm pretty surprised that Red Reddington, being the super spy that he is, allowed him to go and open a drawer and pull out a gun. Like, it was Dembe there, too? Dembe? Was it just
Dembe
Red?
And his slappy hat?
It just shocks me that would... Like, those guys are on
well,
it.
Well, he seemed shocked.
Yeah.
When he shot himself.
Sure.
It was... I don't know. It was pretty inconspicuous.
The idea of him walking up to the drawer and pulling out a gun on Red Reddington, it feels like, even though it was very quick,
I don't think he really saw the gun because he was in front of the drawer.
I feel like that... Well, anyway, I just feel like that Red would have had his gun drawn, but... But anyway,
I don't know.
I digress. All right, so poor Dr. Powell. That happens. That is all tied up. Red then later sort of tells Lizzie that Roger Hobbs may be an asset down the road.
That was kind of a cool scene. I like that scene where she was yelling at him and goes, "I'd be happy to talk to you if you." But not at this volume, or whatever he said.
Yes.
Phrasing. I was like, I love you, Red. This is the Red I love.
And that was another good Red monologue.
Mm-hmm.
That was one of those good old-fashioned Red monologues where he sort of talks about maybe, you know, where was that? Was that in this episode where he does that thing? Or was that in...
No.
No.
He didn't really have that good of a monologue
maybe
this time.
The two episodes together. The
Tom you watched them back to back.
I did.
Yeah.
Okay.
But this is the episode where he did say a dark cloud is coming
yes.
that you can't even see, and Roger Hobbs will be a friend.
Right.
Okay. We need him. Okay. He did say that.
All right. Well, before we get into the whole Tom Keene, Jacob Phelps, Major, like, neo-Nazis coming to get him, torture, Blood Angel situation, I want to just
Eagle.
Take Eagle. Blood Eagle. Sorry. Blood Angel Hannibal.
Yes.
the State Angel. Blood Eagle situation. I need to, can you give me your definitive theory on that? Now, at this point where we are right this very second, season 2, episode 17, like, there's no Joe Sanfilippo and Nando to sit here and yell in our face, "He's the father! Rucka, rucka, rucka!"
No stab, stab today.
No stab,
hashtag
stab.
Hashtag stab, stab, this is Nando.
Just me and you. Like, you know, who really believe that Red is not the father.
Yeah.
But given these last two episodes and given sort of like the flashbacks that we've had, the photos that we've had, and Red sort of coming out and saying like, there's someone protecting someone, which was last week.
That was last week.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. When he did the whole like, you know.
The college girl.
Exactly.
And
what it's like to protect someone. Like, what is your official theory to this point on the relationship of Red Reddington to Elizabeth Keene?
The only thing I can officially say is that I still truly believe that he is not the father.
Okay.
Her father. I'm sticking by that.
If that's the case, and I believe that too, I'm sticking by that. Yellow blouse,
so
be damned.
So I'm wondering, going off of that big monologue from last week, the reason that Lizzie was paying for the girl's college and everything was because she was responsible for the murder of that girl's father, the harbor master.
Yep.
Perhaps... Red was responsible for the murder or death of her father.
Uh-huh. So you're drawing that straight line across.
I don't know. I mean, it was pretty parallel with the way he was talking about it.
Right.
Obviously, I could be extremely wrong. I'm not 100% sticking to this, but I feel like we've skirted around that theory a lot in the last season and a half, and I mean, it would make sense.
I think, I mean, we're in prediction territory, but I believe that to be totally true. And Ashley, we didn't talk about this at all.
Nope.
But I'm totally with that. I'm now convinced that Red and Lizzie's father, real father, were partners.
Mm-hmm.
You know, really close, working together. And through some twisted turn of events, like Red had to...
Well, this all goes into my major prediction of the day.
Yes.
I don't know if we're doing that
now. No, we're not doing it now. Okay, let me just say... Okay, what, okay, you, okay. I'm going to say my thing. I think that, like, somehow... You know, Red had something to do with the thing, and then so Red feels his obligation, and that's why Lizzie's actions from last week in the Tom Keene episode and Red's speech, there's a direct analog between, like, what Lizzie was doing and what Tom, I'm sorry, what Red was saying.
Yes.
And I think that is the biggest clue to everything, as opposed to, because there is no, like, you're my daughter. This is why I love you. I think it's there. There's some, you know, we get a sense of Red's loyalty, extreme loyalty, and also an extreme sense of responsibility for the well-being of Elizabeth Keene, but not because it's his biological daughter, which would be lame and stupid.
Joe Filippo and
Amanda Velasquez. A-holes. All right. So, I love them. Let's not bury the lead. Let's get into the whole Tom Keene. Or should I say Jacob Phelps?
Or shall you say?
Or shall I say Jacob Phelps situation? So, I mean, this is a little wonky for me, a little in some ways, because it is a few questions here that I need to answer that and really. Okay,
I don't know why I can answer them for you because I have questions as well here.
Okay, so let's go through Tom Keene. So okay. Tom Keene in Germany burned. Red Reddington comes out, burns them, like shoots up all the whole neo-Nazi gang.
To which we both thought everybody was dead.
I thought everyone was dead, but save the leader,
Elias.
But Elias. I thought Elias got, but apparently Elias got out. I didn't watch it again because I could have sworn
he got shot. Well, obviously
my man shows up in New York, so
I could have sworn.
Anyway, so they all make it out. So Elias makes it out, and the guy makes it out, and they get a couple other thugs. And so Tom Keene comes back. He's burned. He's on the run. He's looking around. He calls the major to sort of like bring him in.
No, he calls Lizzie first to wish her happy birthday.
Of course. Well, you know.
Have fun at the Chinese food restaurant.
First things first.
Before I make my final escape. Yeah. Happy birthday, baby.
Exactly. Let me...
have fun at our Chinese food restaurant.
Get your priorities straight. I'm completely on the land.
I really need to get in this car, but I know what today is.
Yeah, exactly. I gotta go. My handler's here. Hang on one second, Major. Yeah.
Can you hold on?
Happy birthday, Lizzie.
Hey, you know what today is? Have fun tonight, okay?
There's a kid in the car.
Make a good wish, will you?
Yeah. So Lance Hendrickson, the Major, he comes in from the cold. He picks him up, which I thought was a really kind of very, very good scene between those guys.
Oh yeah, that's
sort
fun.
Of the whole like, okay, what am I doing now? Da, da, da. And he kind of gives the whole like very, very like Italian mafioso, like the whole move of like, don't worry, you're fine. We're gonna go down to this airport over here. Yeah. You're gonna get over on that plane. We're gonna get you all out of here. He's like. There's no plane, is there? Like, no, there's no plane.
No.
that's like, I don't know. That's how like, those guys whack you every time. It's like, hey, buddy, we're gonna go. We're gonna have some sauce over here. We're gonna talk to Vito. We're gonna do this other thing. Whack, 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 whack. Every time, I get to, you know.
That's funny.
Yeah. So they did one of those moves, and finally Tom's like, wait a second. And but that reveal of like, dude, you effed up, you fell in love, and Tom sort of pleading, you know, look, you know, I'm you raised me, like I'm not
just an operative,
yeah, like I'm your son, essentially, yeah. Is what he's saying. And I thought that exchange was really great.
And I love that I warned you about that girl. Now that girl has cost you your life.
Right.
Roll down the window.
Yes.
Yes. Awesome.
Yeah, that was
love, Lance.
But of course, there was a car crash.
And there were some neo-Nazis.
And there was some gunplay. And in that, I never understand. This is not me talking ish about The Blacklist or any other show because I love this. But like, why doesn't Lance pull the trigger right then and there? Like he has the gun pulled when the.
Cause, hey, bro, they got to talk it through. Talk it out.
When the ish is hitting the fan and the car is crashing into the car and the gunfire is starting, why is Lance not like? Bam, Tom Keene. First things first. Boom, you're dead. Now let's see who's out here. He doesn't.
I don't know.
He's like, got the gun and said, what's this crash? What's happening? I'm captured. Anyway.
Maybe the gun was thrown from his hand in the crash.
I'm just being
trying to help.
So anyway, so that happens, and they take them both captive. They mean the neo-Nazi guys who we thought were all dead, who apparently are not dead.
Shocker.
Who come back. And who have found them.
Found them easily.
And not only found them, like, not only found Tom Keene, but found me. I guess presumably they've been following Tom Keene, even though he thought he was pretty, like,
scot free.
All right. So they find them. You know, they find them.
They tracked him out of Dresden.
Okay. They tracked him out of Dresden, found him in the car, found him in the exact moment, got them both, took him out, and want to know what's your involvement with Ritter Reddington. They want to know everything. They, you know, start the torture process. Tom's not going to talk, no matter what. Even when they start to do the bloody eagle.
So what's the bloody eagle? They cut you down the spine, and then they pull out your lungs through your rib cage.
Your lungs through your rib cage.
Because then they could see your lungs.
Oh, anyway,
if you could see me, I'm doing this.
Yes,
and that's bloody right. lungs. Apparently,
it's awful. But they did the cut. Which seems awful.
Seemed painful. To which Tom says, that's a cute story.
Yeah. Good old Tom Keene. He's tough. Until they pull out the ultrasound. Now, what's going on with this ultrasound?
Ultrasound.
Is it the old ultrasound? Okay, first of all.
Okay.
I'm totally confused. Because the ultrasound.
I don't remember Lizzie ever being pregnant. They were going to adopt a baby. But. If they were to adopt a baby and even have that ultrasound, it has the patient's name on there. It doesn't have the soon-to-be, maybe hopefully adoptive parent's name.
Sure.
This printed off of the ultrasound machine said Keene, Elizabeth.
Right.
Just saying.
I don't know.
But she was drinking a lot of wine.
Yes.
At the end of this episode.
So who knows? Help us out, YouTube, on this
please.
One. I'm not sure what happened there. But he pulls out the ultrasound. Does that mean she's pregnant now? Is it the old thing? And da-da-da. Who knows?
Oh, I didn't look for a date on that sonogram.
So they pull it out, and Tom, of course, who's in love with Lizzie, is like, wait! Like, I don't want to, you know, like, don't hurt Lizzie. I'll tell you everything you need to know. Lance Henderson, the major, goes nuts. Like, you know, don't you, you.
Bloody eagle you myself.
Yes, I'll bloody eagle you myself. Like, he says, you need me alive. He cuts him loose. Which is fine.
He also, before he cuts him loose.
Right.
The big thing, Tom throws out Sarah Hastings.
Yes. And
I don't remember a Sarah Hastings.
Well, I think this was part of the mission, which is why he was there in Dresden.
Well, he said she was murdered by someone in your German drug-dealing Nazi group, and I was sent to find out who.
Is there a callback?
I'm just wondering if there's more to it than just that.
Okay.
I don't know. It just seemed very specific to me.
It did seem very specific. So he does that, lets him go. What I'm trying to figure out, though, is they let Tom Keene go. Why the frickin' effety F... Pants. I'm not going to do it. why do they let the major go?
Do not know. I do not know.
And you can go too. Let Tom go first. Like,
I do not know.
He's gone. Of course he's like, rah, 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 rah.
And I thought at least maybe Tom would kill the major since he was just about to kill him.
Yeah, he said, remember that girl who you said was costing me my life? I thought he was going to say, well, he cost you yours.
I thought the same thing.
But he's like, she just saved mine. I'll see you later. We'll meet you for tea later. What? Like, what happened there? I don't know. Okay, so he's gone. Tom's out, you know, in the wind, going to
burning his passport.
Burning his passport, doing whatever. The major is now after Tom. The neo-Nazis are presumably running Tom. And Tom is back on the lam, in the wind again, going to warn Lizzie Keene about that, how much she's in danger. He had nowhere else to go. He goes to the motel and meets her there.
He was going to warn her?
I don't know. He had nowhere else to go.
He said he had nowhere to go. I don't think that had anything to do with her safety.
Well, he just kind of, I guess he assured her safety by
saying she's an FBI agent.
Right.
Don't mess with her.
And let
I'll
me
help
go.
You if you promise not to touch her.
Right. They let him go because they need him alive, too.
And they don't want the FBI breathing down their backs.
Fine. Okay, but Lance Henderson, I don't know why he's still alive.
I don't know. The major, but he made a call.
He made a call to some other super...
I don't care what it costs.
Yes.
Get rid of Jacob Phelps.
Jacob Phelps. So I don't know. I don't care how wonky it is. It's all cool. Because that means the Major is going to have some assassins coming after Tom Keen. Tom Keen's going to have to go all badass.
Totally.
All Bourne Identity.
I'm cool with that.
On some assassins. I'm cool with that.
Cool
with that. Lizzie's going to be saving Lizzie. Red's going to come in. Red doesn't like Tom. Like, this is all good.
Oh, yeah.
This is all good for us.
Red is not going to be happy about this.
So this who cares how wonky it was?
I didn't see previews for next week. Did you?
I did.
Oh.
Red's not happy about
this. He's not happy? Because I think he's going to be real pissed.
I'll just say Red's not happy about Tom Keen bumping around and Lizzie, like, shrugging her shoulders. There's also, there may or may not be some sort of romantic interlude in the previews. which, yes.
Really?
And now, you're after between Red and Tom.
It's a bummer.
All right, let's get these predictions out of the way. Tell me, what's your prediction? You're the one here. I have to go to you first.
It's a little lofty.
All right, let's hear it.
I can't really back it up completely yet, but I can't take all the credit for it. But I think that the number one blacklister is Lizzie Keene. If this is all one big puzzle piece, all roads lead to Lizzie and what she knows and trying to extract that memory and who she is.
Well, I'll be GD. That's great. I love that. That's a good one. That might be true. Okay, I like that. I think she may be like number. She's probably top. Okay, I like that theory. I'm going to go back and just extrapolate what I was saying earlier. I just think that somehow Lizzie's dad and Tom are. I wonder if Lizzie's real dad is. I think Lizzie's real dad may still be alive. Maybe
I would not be surprised.
My weird prediction. This is we're going out here predictions. I think Lizzie's dad, man to be cast later as a big casting coup. It'll be
someone awesome.
Yeah, I don't know, someone big. And Lizzie's dad's still alive. Red thinks that he's dead. Red thinks that he killed him or had to kill him.
I love this prediction.
Red thinks that all these years has been like trying to help his old partner take care of his daughter to find the information that his dead partner, blah, 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 blah. And then only to be revealed that the guy is still alive. And that's that.
Totally. I'm with you.
Oh, man, I love that one. I hope I'm right about that.
I hope I'm right about mine. Perhaps we should sit down and combine our predictions and come up with one, like, major prediction and blow Nando and Flippo out of the water.
Yeah, they're already blowing the water. That was fun, Julia. Me and you.
That was fun. Like, it was a lovely date, Brad.
Old school. Nice date. Thank you for joining us. You can check out Joe Sanfilippo at josephsanfilippo.com and on Instagram and Twitter at joeflippo.com. Check out Nando Velasquez at Nando on Twitter and Instagram at nandovel.com. And for you, Julia?
With my name, Julia Carely, JULIACEARLEY on both Twitter and on Instagram.
And me, Joe Braswell at Joe K. Braswell on Twitter and Instagram. And here in After Buzz on the Bates Motel and I think Mad Men coming up. And our sister network, BHL, for Geek Nerd Tech. Thank you so much for joining us. Thank you for being here. We'll see you next week.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz, see you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principal.